This is an interview for the Gay and Lesbian Archives of the Pacific Northwest. My name's Nicole Anderson, and my partner is...
Aaron Gillis.
And we will be interviewing...
Jimmy Rodasta.
And it is February 10th, 2010, and we are in the Portland State University Library basement.
Okay, let's start out by getting some basic information about you. Can you tell us where and when you were born?
Yes, I was born December 13th, 1971, in Salem, Oregon. So I'm one of the few Oregon natives.
Were you raised in Salem, or?
Yes, born, raised, went to North Salem High School, and only lived outside of Oregon for college, where I went to Pepperdine University and earned my journalism degree. And then a five-month internship in Boise, Idaho at the Idaho Statesman. But other than that, I've been in Oregon my entire life.
Did you, you said you went to high school in Salem. Did you have an awareness of then being a gay man? And kind of, what was that like, sort of being a high school person?
Well, this was 1986 through 1990, so at least in Salem, Oregon, there were no openly gay students. There was no gay-straight alliance. So while I was aware of some same-sex attraction, I had no examples to look to, and so I stayed closeted because it was not a safe... It didn't feel safe to be out. In fact, one of the things I touched on in my one-man show, which we'll be getting to later, I had a German teacher who actually had no problem gay bashing in the middle of class, and I had no understanding that that was something that was highly inappropriate and I could have gotten him fired for. But he would make comments like, he called all Democrats faggots during the 88 election, and he... after class with some of his teacher's pets, of which I was one, he taught us how to say something naughty in German, which was exciting at the time, and it was the word was Schwule Totschlagen, and I that meant kill all fags, and I had no concept about how inappropriate that was at the time, but I stayed in the closet because I like I said, I didn't have examples to show me what it would be like to be come out of the closet and be and live a openly gay life. So at the time I think I was still convinced by some of the propaganda that was out there that you could that it's just a phase and that you can get over it.
What was your coming out experience like?
Well, that didn't happen until I was 27. I had started coming out to a few people in the years prior, but I did not decide to tell everybody until I was 27. The stress of staying in the closet was really starting to get to me. I actually had a panic attack and had to go to the emergency room, and that was because of other health issues as well. But I, when I finally made the decision to come out, a good friend of mine, her name's C.M. Hall. I'm sure she's also been archived about because she's. Worked for Basic Rights Oregon, has done a lot of prominent gay rights work. She helped me, because we went to high school together, but we didn't really connect as openly gay people until later on, and she got me a book called Outing Yourself by Michelangelo Signorelli, and it was kind of a step-by-step guide to coming out and how to do it right. So you tell your parents in a way where you don't apologize for being gay, but you just say, I love you, and you need to know everything there is about me. And so that was the year that I decided to tell everybody. And as it turns out, by that point, pretty much everybody had figured it out. So it was kind of just confirming what they already knew. But it was an interesting experience because you realize how many fears are internalized and how many assumptions you're making about your friends and your loved ones, and you think the worst about them because you have to prepare for the worst. What if they disown you or stop talking to you or whatever? But it was not an issue at all.
It's great.
Yeah.
So maybe shifting to your professional life a little bit, can you tell us how you got involved with journalism in the first place, why you chose it, and maybe tell us how you heard about Just Out?
Okay. Well, the journalism goes all the way back to 1987 when I joined the staff of my high school student newspaper, and I probably had an interest in that because I was interested in writing chiefly. But also a very heavy interest in pop culture, so I got to write record reviews and fun things like that. But then that led to my journalism studies at Pepperdine, where I also learned about hard news reporting. And that's also where I had my first experience writing about anything gay-related, which was when a student on Pepperdine's campus... There's a free speech zone on campus called The Rock, and Pepperdine's an ultra-conservative Church of Christ university, so this, for them, is liberal to have a rock where people can paint whatever they want. And so a bunch of underground students decided to paint a pink triangle on it because Coming Out Day coincided with Parents Weekend. So all the parents were coming to visit campus, and they were like letting it be known that there are gay students on campus, of which I had no awareness because I was still closeted. And they called up the newspaper and said, we want to go on the record anonymously about what we just did. And then what ended up happening was a conservative Christian student painted over their pink triangle in gold. And I interviewed him as well because I found out who it was. And that's when he told me, on the record, if they want to paint that again, I'll watch over them with my baseball bat. And I quoted him verbatim saying that, and he made up all sorts of stories that I misquoted him, or I didn't tell him I was from the newspaper. But he ended up, it actually ended up revealing a lot of support for gay students that I didn't know was there on campus, because people were horrified that somebody could say such a thing, and he ended up having to transfer to another university as a result of that. So that's where I got my first taste of gay-specific journalism and the importance of covering those issues. And after graduation, I worked at the Statesman Journal in Salem for a few years as a copy editor, and then at the Scanner, an African-American paper in Portland, for a couple of years as a copy editor. And then I got the job at Just Out in 2000, first as news editor for 4 years, and then as entertainment editor for 4 years. And the way I came across Just Out was, again, my friend C.M. Hall encouraged me after coming out of the closet in 99, the next year in 2000, she encouraged me to go to the Millennium March on Washington, and that's where I got my first taste of gay activism as well. And that's where I met the publisher of Just Out, and I hit her up for a job. There were no openings there, but she kept me in mind, and then a few months later there was an opening, and I was the first person she offered the job to. So it was just really great timing that brought me there. And I was getting, I might be jumping ahead to questions that are coming up, but I was getting very frustrated with the way that mainstream media were covering gay issues. So it was not only a good career move for me professionally, but also personally.
So what was frustrating you about the gay issue?
Well, I would see, for example, the way the Oregonian would cover the 2000 No on 9 campaign. That's the one that would have, the Measure 9 would have prohibited public schools from promoting, endorsing, or sanctioning homosexuality or bisexuality. And it was run by Lon Mabon down in Brooks, and it was yet another in a string of anti-gay ballot measures that he had proposed. But the response to it was very strong, and for example, downtown Portland at Pioneer Square, there was a huge rally where hundreds of people turned out to protest this measure. And the Oregonian, in their coverage of the measure, in the name of balance, and I put that in quotes, they felt the need to go to Lon Mabon for his reaction to it. And so they gave him equal time, even though hundreds of people turned out. They're the ones making the news. They're the ones who did something. That's what was newsworthy that day. Juan Maybaum was just sitting in Brooks on his butt and not doing anything with his same old message of stretching the truth. And so I could see how the mainstream media, in this misguided attempt at balance, was actually tipping the scales towards their end. Because I think, for example, if you were to have a Martin Luther King Day rally, you wouldn't call up David Duke down in Louisiana and say, well, what are your thoughts on this rally? Do you believe in equal rights? But that's the way that they were treating it, like this thing like where if you cover something that's pro-gay, that you have to balance it out by spreading these old, tired lies from the anti-gay side. And so that's where I saw the need for coverage that was from a gay perspective.
Did you ever, working for the mainstream press, did you ever encounter like an outright editorial bias against the lesbian and gay community?
I don't think I did in my experience. I think the closest I could say was the example I just gave about the way the Oregonian covered gay issues. And another thing I remember they did in their headline, they said something like, "Hundreds turn out to protest measure some have called anti-gay." I mean, to say the measure is something that some people have called anti-gay is already a stretch. It is an anti-gay measure. It's a measure that's trying to make gay people out to be these pariahs that are trying to convert students to their side by having diversity education. I mean, it's just ridiculous. So, but I would say no. In my experience at the Statesman Journal, in the mainstream media, I did not encounter any outright homophobia. But it's not like the Statesman Journal was really covering gay issues either. That's the other thing, is there's just so much underreported things, topics that only would get coverage in a gay publication.
How does the role of a gay community journalist differ from that of a mainstream journalist? Do you have different responsibilities or sort of a different approach?
Well, I would say that I was actually just talking about this with somebody who used to work for Basic Rights Oregon, and I think there is a certain responsibility that comes there. It's where it's more than just a job, because not only are you covering these topics that greatly impact people's lives, but you then have to be out in the community and get to know these people. So it's not just like you're a gay journalist from 9 to 5 and then you live the rest of your life. It's kind of like my friend's experience at Basic Rights Oregon. You're everything you do reflects on the gay community, and so it does have an added importance. And the biggest difference between I think being a gay journalist and being a mainstream journalist is that mainstream journalists at least operate under the guise that they're objective, which is kind of, and I put that in air quotes too, because there really is no such thing as objectivity. Everybody comes to the table with bias, but at least we wear our bias out there, where we are admitting we are slanted towards the gay side, and we're going to be presenting that side. I mean, hopefully we'll be presenting the other side fairly and accurately, but we're still there to offer news from a gay perspective.
What do you think was the most important or most touching story that you covered during your time at Just Out?
I would say the same-sex marriage coverage of 2004, because that was something that really put Portland on the map as a welcoming place for gays and lesbians. It was a very tumultuous time because George Bush had been using gay marriage as a wedge issue to get out the vote, even though he really had no plans to amend the Constitution to ban same-sex marriage. It was just it's sort of like they had no plans to actually outlaw abortion, because they controlled the White House and Congress at one point. They didn't do anything about it. So it was just all a way to just stoke up their base and get people to come out and vote in 2004. So then in reaction to it, as you might remember, in February of 2004, San Francisco did a really renegade action by giving out licenses to same-sex couples, even though it was against the law in that state. And then a month later, Multnomah County did the same thing. And so these four brave women, you know, put their careers on the line, but they also followed the rules by never disobeying the... There's a quorum where if the Multnomah commissioners get together to discuss anything, and there's more than three of them, I believe, then that technically counts as an official meeting, and that needs to be on the record, and the public and the press need to be invited. But what they did was they danced around those rules by never having more than three of them in the room, I believe. I might be misquoting all that, but that was my understanding of it, and that they figured out a way to interpret the Constitution so that they can hand out same-sex marriage licenses. And it was actually interesting on a couple levels, because you got to see how the official government of our city and our county were making this very public statement of support, even going against the state law, but interpreting it in a way that they thought was accurate. And but it also, the reaction to it from even the mainstream media, like the Oregonian, was very indignant and also a little bit sexist. I think this idea that these four women, where do they get off interpreting the law this way? How dare they? But it was just a really radical thing for them to do, and even though it didn't work out in the long run, it still was a necessary thing to get us to where we are today. We're now we're just debating between civil unions and full marriage rights, which is someplace we were never at before that happened.
What was the mood at Just Out like as these stories were breaking around the marriage issue? If you could kind of describe how people felt and how that impacted the news gathering.
Well, I unfortunately, most of my memories of this are of pure stress, because prior to that, there wasn't a whole lot going on. There wasn't a lot of hard breaking news to be covering. So the pace of my job changed drastically, and it was a very small staff, and so I remember that being a time of a great deal of work, and also feeling like almost like I needed more support staff in order to give these issues the coverage it deserved, because there were just so many angles going on. There was not only the celebration of joy, I mean, like truly you felt the love in the air for that week following their decision. I mean, there were couples lined up around the block, so many people with so many stories to tell about they've been together for years and they never had this opportunity and never thought they would. And then they had to not only get their license, but then they had to get married. So they were rushing over to Keller Auditorium, where they had a whole setup with pastors ready to conduct all these impromptu wedding ceremonies. So there was a lot of joy, but then there was also a lot of anger and the response to that. So there was just a lot to do, and It was actually after that all happened that I realized that what we really were missing at the paper was a full-time staff writer. And so when I switched from news editor to entertainment editor, I suggested there was a third editor on staff who was kind of doing odd jobs in between. And I suggested that we actually make a full-time staff writer out of that, because that's something when I was news editor, I needed somebody who could jump, leave the office and go cover things. But when you're glued to your desk, it was hard. So that I remember a lot of challenges, but I also remember it being a time of just excitement.
Was there one particular story or a cover for Just Out that you remember specifically from that period as being somehow significant?
Not from that period, but I can tell you about the time that Lon Mabon was arrested. That was a couple years prior to that. And that was one of the more exciting ones. And actually, I had to get in a big fight with my boss about the newsworthiness of it, because we had something else planned for the cover, and I knew that this was a historic moment, because Lon Mabon in the 90s was the anti-gay boogeyman. He was very powerful. In 1992, you know, Ballot Measure 9 was a very successful campaign, and even though it ended up losing, but it still... it made a lot of money, so then it forced us to raise a lot of money to fight it, and forced a lot of people to come out of the closet. So, you know, in a way, Lon Mabon has helped the gay rights movement ultimately, but this was his downfall when he had been hauled into court in around 2002 because one of his henchmen assaulted a lesbian photojournalist at an OCA event 10 years prior. She won a settlement, but they wouldn't pay her. And they claimed they were out of money, but her attorneys were able to prove that they were still receiving a steady stream of donations, but they just shuffled it around among different non-profit entities to make it look like they had no money. And so he was hauled into court and cited for contempt and arrested. And so the headline was, "Go to jail. Go directly to jail. Do not pass judgment. Do not collect." And it was something like that, playing off of Monopoly.
How has the internet changed news since you started?
Well, it's changed it completely, because I graduated from Pepperdine in 1994, literally the year I got introduced to the internet. And boy, did my degree become obsolete like the moment I graduated, because the internet changes everything. And especially a paper like Just Out, that's completely advertiser supported. It's a free publication. And so if, for example, people can now find gay friendly roommates on Craigslist, before that, Just Out was the only place you could find that kind of information, or to find gay-friendly realtors and things like that. So it greatly reduced advertising. It also, I think, created an information overload that I think we're still in the middle of it, which is why it's very hard to say how this will play out in the future, but people just read less, or their attention is distracted more. It's hard to say. They're reading blogs, they're updating their Twitter, reading their friends' Twitter updates, Facebook, and so there's not a lot of attention to be devoted to reading newspapers. So it's hurt us in many ways. But at the same time, it also helps disseminate information more widely, because you don't actually have to have that hard copy newspaper in front of you. And for a very small publication that's having it driven around the state by about six drivers, it instantly makes that information available globally. So it's had a good impact and a negative impact.
Did Just Out have like a new media strategy for getting its message out over the internet, and in terms of how did the newspaper in particular respond?
Very slowly, I would say. And again, it's because it was such a small paper with a small budget. Unfortunately, we were way behind the curve on that, and it took us a long time to update our website to make it more user-friendly, and then it took a while to get a blog up. But once the blog was up and running, it became a popular way to get people information that didn't happen, or that happened in between the issues, since we only came out first and third Fridays. there if there was any breaking news in between, or just sometimes it's nice to link people to an article about some national subject that didn't get any coverage in the paper. So that became a good way to have sort of a sister publication online in addition to the print publication. But there was no real strategy. I think since I left Just Out, they may be doing a little more on Facebook and Twitter, but at the time I was there, it was just getting the website and the blog up and running was enough of an accomplishment. But we were definitely behind the curve on that one.
As you said before, you started doing a one-man show. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. It's called, right now at least, Triskaidekaphilia, Just My Luck. And Triskaidekaphilia is a word I sort of coined as the flip side to Triskaidekaphobia, which is the irrational fear of the number 13. And so the show is themed around growing up feeling unlucky and then turning it around. And so it's about the struggles of growing up gay in Salem. And so I tell the story about Shula Totschlagen and other kind of poignant but also humorous anecdotes from that period. And then basically coming out very late in life at 27, and then the very next year finding myself a professional homosexual, as we call it. And so it was a very, very sudden shift to be a late blooming closet case, and then all of a sudden to be on the front lines of covering this stuff. And so that's just a rough outline of the arc that the show takes. But then the format of the show I call memoirioki, because it's monologues interspersed with karaoke performances, and the whole thing takes place in a karaoke bar. And the idea there is to get people out of the traditional theater setting and into a new setting where, you know, I'm thinking especially for people who might not go to the theater, to just change up the venue a little bit, and also to create an atmosphere where they can drink and enjoy themselves. I want to create that kind of an intimacy with the audience.
Just to step back a little bit, you mentioned transitioning over from being sort of a private or maybe a closeted person to suddenly being in the public eye and having your name associated with gay stuff. What was that like? What did that feel like, moving from sort of one public identity to another that way?
It was scary. I mean, I had previously been afraid just to even tell my closest friends and family that I was gay. I did that, got a great reaction. Then I got the job at Just Out. Then I went to my high school reunion, my 10-year reunion, and I had to tell people what I did for a living. And again, I was wondering, am I going to have all these negative reactions to deal with? But I decided, because it's my job, I'm not going to pick and choose, like, oh, I think they'll be gay-friendly, and they won't, so I'll tell them that I work at a newspaper, I'll tell them that I work at a gay newspaper. I decided to tell everybody that I worked at a gay newspaper, and they were all fine with it. So again, a lot of those assumptions. But then my name's in print, and, you know, I, still being very fear-based, was thinking that the Lon Mabons of the world and his crazy followers would come after me or look me up in the phone book, or I didn't know what to expect, basically. But all those things were running through my head, that something negative would come of it, and that never happened. So, but it was a very sudden shift, and ultimately empowering, which is also something I touch on in my show, that I felt very bullied by these people for so long, and then here I am now in a position where I can expose them. So, like, for example, one of my favorite stories is that after Lon Mabon got arrested, I got to confront his wife, Bonnie Mabon, who was also, you know, a leader in the anti-gay movement, and that's a prime example where I saw the mainstream media not covering the story properly, because her attorneys had a very ridiculous defense that the reason Lon didn't have to pay the money he owed to the lesbian, her name was Catherine Stauffer, by the way, the reason he didn't have to pay the money to her was because the judge's oath didn't match the language in the Oregon Constitution word for word, which was a bizarre technicality that's only fringe groups like the Freeman in Montana use to get out of something they don't want to have to play out. So the media were kind of buying into this whole thing and asking questions and almost taking the whole argument seriously, and they were missing the whole point, which was that they didn't want to pay their money to a lesbian. That's all that it was. And so I got to basically cut to the chase and ask Bonnie Mabon, how does it feel to be brought down by a lesbian? And so those are questions that weren't being asked, and I also remember another time later in, because this then stretched out for a few months, and I remember Bonnie and Lon put out a press release complaining about the militant homosexual activists, and I asked them, who are you referring to when you refer to these militant homosexual activists? Because I, at the time, like my friend CM worked at Basic Rights Oregon, and I knew other people who worked there, and I just wanted them to be specific, because that's one of those phrases that sort of like the homosexual agenda that these people perpetuated, and if you just don't question it, you end up, I wanted to know specifically who are they talking about, because if they're talking about the people who work at Basic Rights Oregon as militant homosexuals, I wanted them to just say that. So it was good to be able to ask those follow-up questions that weren't being asked by the mainstream media.
I want to come back to your one-man show, but first, I'm curious to know, did you have much of a chance to meet or interact with or interview people like Scott Lively and Lon Mabon? Did they make themselves available to the gay media?
Yes, I'm glad you asked about that, because actually, Lon Mabon had not offered an interview to Just Out for years when I arrived, because he assumed that we would be making him out to be the evil man he is. But I was very persistent in calling him, even though it was scary. It's especially like when you're back to when I was closeted. I mean, you're making all these assumptions about your loved ones and your friends that they're going to be anti-gay, and as I found out, they weren't. But when you actually have somebody that you're calling up and you know that they don't like your kind, that's scary. And I called him, and as it turns out, I think once he realized that I was a professional and that I just wanted to get his side of the story, he responded in kind. So I was able to interview him. Not Scott Lively. He had already moved away from Oregon by that point. But he's the henchman I referred to, assaulted Catherine Stauffer. But it was great to finally interview Lon and to realize that he is just a guy. He's not some force or anything. He's just a guy who's got some pretty messed up views about this topic that we disagree about. But I have to admit, he was ultimately respectful to me, and it made me realize the whole thing. It's nothing personal. That this is his job. He's on the wrong side of this issue, but it also helped me personally overcome a lot of my fears when I realized that, you know, he's a pussycat, basically. He's not the ogre that in your worst fears you make him out to be.
Back to your one-man show, I guess. Mm-hmm. What is your favorite part about doing the one-man show?
Well, one thing that I was not getting at a newspaper was feedback. Because it's very one-way communication. You're just putting it out there, and I would always ask at the end, please send me your feedback, and I would get maybe one email per column. But I was putting a lot of work into it, and I really wanted to know, was I making people laugh? Was I making people think? And I wasn't getting a good sense of that. And so the thing I love about the one-man show, and I'm actually going to tie this into something else that's going on that wasn't on your list, but I'm also running an event now called Face to Face, an ongoing series of community dialogues at the Q Center. And it was in response to this whole problem that I have with newspapers being one-way communication and not allowing feedback. And then it was also in response to blogs allowing feedback, but in a very anonymous, nasty kind of way where people can say things that they would never say to another person face-to-face. So I'm having this event at the Q Center. Right now it's quarterly, but we hope to make it bi-monthly, where people can come together, talk out some issues where there might be disagreement within the gay community, but just to offer a space for that kind of conversation to happen, because Portland is one of the largest cities to not have a gay community center until just recently. And so now we have this space where we can do that and just try to understand each other a little better. And again, that's something I wasn't getting at the newspaper, and even with the blog, you're still getting this nasty discourse, and I want people to just understand that we're all coming usually from a very common place, but we just might have different approaches. So face-to-face is in response to that, but also the show was, because I was getting immediate feedback from people when I'm making them think, I can tell, and when I'm making them laugh, I can definitely tell, and that's the best thing that I've gotten out of the experience.
As far as your series at the Q Center, what kind of issues are there within the gay community that really need that kind of interaction to take place?
Well, right now, I think it would be great if we could talk about the mayor's sex scandal, because I think that's a very complex issue where, you know, we all took a lot of pride in Mayor Adams' election because he represents us as gay people. And now that he's been revealed to have made some unfortunate decisions in his personal life, that he, you know, he unfortunately mixed it up and made it a professional issue. I just think the whole thing, it how can we not, if we took pride in him being elected, how can we not take a little shame in him having this revelation? But that topic is a little bit too politically sensitive for the Q Center to take on. So, but that's one example of what initially made me propose face-to-face. There are other issues like public sex. That's something where I know that my former boss at Just Out had some strong opinions about that topic, feeling like it's an epidemic of gay men having sex in parks. Most people I know aren't affected by it. I have no opinion on the matter, but I just know that it seems like it's not to that degree of calamity. And so there are other people who are very adamant about wanting to defend that practice, and or at least talk about why are police resources being used to have sting operations in bathrooms and things like that. So that's another topic. Our last one just last week was about the post-gay movement, which is a new thing where people don't wear their gay identity as their defining identity, and sort of asking the question, is it too soon for that? Because we still have such a long ways to go. But it's a trend that's undeniable. I mean, there are fewer people reading the gay paper, fewer people going to gay film festivals, fewer people going to the gay men's chorus concerts, fewer people going to the gay church. And so is that a good thing, or does that represent that we've assimilated to the point where we don't need those things? Or is it showing a little bit of complacency among a younger generation? Or is it a class thing where if you're rich and you have all your legal rights covered, you don't need to be fighting for gay marriage rights? Or is it an urban-rural thing, where if you live in a progressive urban bubble, then you don't feel the need to fight for the rights of all of our brothers and sisters out in the sticks who really need the help? So there's all sorts of topics. I just like the idea of having a place where we can talk and not assume that we all think the same way, because I think that is something that in a very politically correct town like Portland, people tend to do. They assume that, like, for example, all gay people are pro-choice, or that they're already on board with racial justice issues. So we have all sorts of heavy discussions to be having down the line.
So what is your opinion on, I know, I think it's obvious to every observer that a lot of the gay community stuff we had in the past has been sort of, is becoming sort of dispersed and dissolving, you know, closing of gay bars, bars moving off of Stark Street. People might feel more assimilated and have more a broader opportunity for socializing. Do you think that's good? Or is it bad? Are we heading to a good outcome or a bad outcome?
I think it's ultimately going to be a good outcome because, I mean, at least in terms of the gay bars, I think the fact that they're dropping is, it's more an indication that as business owners, they're not keeping up with the needs of their clientele. And a lot of the gay bars still have painted windows, and a lot of old school kind of thinking that needs to evolve, in my opinion. So that is just the way things are going. Gay film festival's not doing well. I think it's a good thing that you no longer have to go to a gay film festival to see a movie like Milk or Brokeback Mountain. I still think there are topics, though, that will only be covered at a gay film festival. Like, you won't get to see a documentary about the transgender member of parliament from New Zealand anywhere other than in a gay film festival. So it's ultimately a good thing that these gay-specific entities are evolving. I also don't want to see a younger generation forget the importance of those entities, because I think it, and that's where one way where I think Just Out has really failed is in trying to remain relevant to a younger generation. And again, like, that's a business decision, and like with these gay bars, if you don't keep up with what your clients' needs are, then you're going to fade away.
How do you perceive the younger generation as different from your own, as gay youth, mm-hmm. different from you?
Well, a lot of them, I guess the median age for coming out now is like 13 or something like that. I was 27, so, I mean, in that respect, we couldn't be more different. I mean, they're getting to, test the grounds dating at such an earlier age. So that's a great thing, but they're also, like I said, they might be missing out on sort of the strength that comes when gay people have to come together in these special venues or with these newspapers, film festivals, pride festivals, and really feel that sense of pride. Because if you've been out and proud your entire life, it's easy to forget how important those experiences are. But it's hard for me to even know what it's like, because they may have felt less marginalized, then they may not have a need for that feeling of that outlet that a gay pride festival gives you. But I just would I would think that everybody would want to experience that, where you can just celebrate yourself publicly and have that experience.
What Portland events, gay events, have you attended during your time at Just Out? I mean, have you gone to a lot of prides? Have you, that sort of thing?
Yeah, I go to Gay Pride every June. It's kind of nice to now be there as a non-professional homosexual, rather than having to work at it. I got to go to the premiere of Milk. You know, I got to interview Gus Van Sant, and that was a big moment of pride because I've gotten to spend a lot of time around a lot of very admirable people, whether it's Mayor Adams or Thomas Lauderdale from Pink Martini or Gus Van Sant, Oscar-nominated director, I'm very inspired to be around people who are raising visibility for our community.
Can we do a time check to see where we are?
Yeah, it's 10:47.
It's 10:47. Okay, just maybe we can wrap up. We were talking before about your one-man show, and we keep getting redirected. So are there any more performances planned?
Nothing scheduled officially, but this was just a staged reading. I mean, I literally finished writing it 2 weeks before the show because this was part of the festival called Fertile Ground. And it's supposed to be for works in progress and new works. So I was kind of just testing it out in a staged reading format to see if the format worked and if the material clicked with audiences, and it seems to have. So the next stage is to make some refinements to it and then bring it back in a fully staged format where I've memorized the entire script. And so I guess right now it just depends on how much tweaking I want to do to it. Right now I'm sort of in the feedback process and hearing from people what they thought of it and meeting with people. But it'll be back. And my dream would be able to take it on the road to gay film festival, or sorry, gay community centers, and maybe even present it to younger gay people who might relate to the struggles of coming out, especially in smaller towns.
I guess what has been the hardest part about putting together the one-man show? Where have you struggled?
Well, I was definitely revealing a lot of personal information, but I knew that if I was going to do this, I needed to be very open. And so I guess the biggest struggle was deciding how much I wanted to share of myself, because there were, especially at my opening night, there were people in the audience who were there for a lot of these experiences, and so that was a big challenge, just to decide how much I wanted to share, because I didn't want to take it into the darkest places of my past, like feeling suicidal when I was a teenager, because the ultimate goal is also to entertain people, so I try to get that balance right between the levity and the heavy stuff.
Do you think that will change as you edit it? Do you think you'll dig deeper? Or are you happy with your material as it is right now?
I could dig deeper, yeah. I think now that the more I see that there's the connection is there between audience and performer, and now that I know that connection's there, I can trust that and just build off of that. It's been all of these experiences have been helpful because prior to my show, I did a thing called Mortified, where people read from their teenage diaries to total strangers. They do it in 9 cities around the country, and that's actually where my performance bug became reignited, because I'd read my high school my high school graduation speech in 1990, and hadn't done anything on stage until 2007 when I did Mortified, and so that's where I started realizing that there is a lot of interesting stories that can be mined from my past that may have been a darker period of my life, but that now through today's eyes, there's a lot of humor to be found there, and also just a lot of common feelings of alienation that even among straight people they can relate to. That's another connection I really like about the show, is that it's not just by gay people for gay people. It's about human experience and trying to figure out who you are. You know.
I think we're actually coming up to the end of our time.
Yeah.
So is there anything else you'd like to say to contribute to the archive, something maybe we haven't covered here that you think is significant about your experiences at Just Out or being in the gay community?
Nothing in particular. I'm grateful that I had the opportunity to help get these stories out there, whether news stories or entertainment stories, because I think there is a lot to be, there's a lot of notable things going on in Portland, and in particular, actually, I could go into this a little bit, the evolution of the drag community was another big step forward. It's sort of like this evolution of from people stopping to go to the gay bars on Stark Street and starting to go to, like, now we have gay nights at mainstream bars, and also the drag community I saw evolve in a big way, where there was the old school Darcelle type drag queens, and then over the time that I was at Just Out, there was a sort of new style drag queen, like they were a troupe called Sissy Boy in particular, that really celebrated the weirdness of Portland, and so it was just. It was a really great evolution to see, and so I'm excited for where we go from here.
Okay.
Great. Well, thank you for your time. We really appreciate you coming here. And
thank you very much.
Yeah.
Thank you for archiving this.